From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon. Broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan or on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, October 20th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunathchish, Hawa, Salamat for joining the conversation. On today's show, CERC, Alaska's Educational Resource Center, are back in full swing post-pandemic. We'll chat about CERC and the Learning Center and all that they offer to support learning in Southeast Alaska. We are inching closer to Halloween, boo, and Eagle Crest Ski Area's Nights of Fright, including a haunted Fish Creek Lodge, opens tonight. Plus, we'll hear a news report from the statewide annual Alaska Federation of Natives Conference and episode 3 of the KTOO podcast Maga Cuento, which dropped today. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau kanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Learning Connection provides wraparound services to students looking to build a better life through education. They offer GED classes, tutoring, trades training, computer classes, and job placement programs. It's all program of CERC, Alaska's Educational Resource Center. And here to share about CERC and its programs is Joe Kiefer. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Gunathchish for coming on today. So before we talk about the specific program of the Learning Center, remind us about CERC and its mission and some of its like overall programs.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, CERC was part of a statewide mandate to offer resource centers around the state for education and education services. And throughout the years, a lot of those resource centers have had various challenges or issues. And now CERC remains as the educational resource center to serve the whole state, not just Southeast. So CERC does technology services to help school districts, works with superintendents, provides curriculum and, you know, educational resources for training, and then also adult education.
That is wild that you are based here in Juneau, but you're basically the adult resource center for the state.
Yeah, our educational resource center.
Overall, educational, for a lot of different things. Because you're not just helping adults do some things like GEDs and things. You're also doing district-wide services.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And what kind of stuff do you do in the district? Or districts, I should say.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, in some ways that's beyond my my pay grade. But, you know, I think one of the things I think about is that our, you know, we have a technology arm of CERC that helps rural school districts set up, you know, email servers and all of the educational software that they use for students and that kind of stuff. So they are like kind of helping and coming in with all the detail work and then being able to manage that so a school district doesn't have to worry about it.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking at the website and it is comprehensive in terms of the things that y'all have. I mean, we just talked about these district services and there's specific educator services, mm-hmm. Which helps with special education as well as professional learning, like probably ongoing training for teachers and things like that.
Exactly.
And then it's also, then we get to sort of the learning center aspect of it. And you've been able to sort of come around from the pandemic because you had to do a lot of probably, what did you have to do during the pandemic? Was it a lot of online learning kind of things?
Yeah, yeah. It went to, you know, fully remote and for a place, you know, we're downtown. We work with a lot of different folks, you know, walk-ins, you know, stop in for a moment to chat about classes and stuff. And all of that kind of, you know, was stopped with the pandemic. It became laptops and Zoom sessions and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it made a lot of our work, which is very like person-based work and relationship-based work, really hard to do, you know, because of that distance.
Must be nice to be sort of back in person.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's, you know, that's the exciting thing. And that's what we really want folks to know in Juneau is that we're back in person and that we can, you know, we can get in there and set you up with specifics and connect you with tutors. And it's no longer behind the screen like it was.
Yeah. I don't think the joy of seeing somebody have the moment of learning, you know, when they get it right. I think that's better in person than over Zoom.
I mean, even this morning I was teaching a class and the joy of just having different students talk to each other, you know, it was an English learning class and be able to share, and it's the laughter and those kind of things. Yeah. It's just I'm biased, but I think it's better in person.
So. I mean, it was nice to have the technology during the pandemic, but in person is always better. Yeah. So I think that is important. So what kind of things does the Learning Center do?
Yeah, or Learning Connection. Yeah, we...
Learning Connection. Yeah, my bad.
All good. Yeah, well, we do a bunch of different things. And the idea of Learning Connection is that it's sort of wraparound services for all the various parts of education and job placement that someone might need. You know, our motto is, you know, helping people build a better life through education. And so someone might come in and one of the easiest, most straightforward services that we can offer is help taking their GED, right? So for someone that is looking to earn their high school equivalency, they can come in. We offer classes and tutoring for all the subjects. We pay for all the tests for our students, and we can get them through a process that works for them so that they can earn their GED and, you know, make more at their job and get the kind of jobs that they want.
Now, this is a thing you just mentioned, and I think this is amazing. This is a resource that doesn't cost anything for the person looking to get that GED.
Exactly. Yeah. So for all of our services, our, you know, job placement services for, our program called JobX, which, you know, helps 16 to 24 year olds with job placement, our computer classes, it's all totally free for our students.
How is that possible? Is that made up through some of the revenue via the state to handle the districts and the teacher education and all that kind of thing? Or is there also grants involved?
Yeah, there are some grants involved. Yeah, we're really lucky to have the support of the Juneau Community Foundation as a grant. And then also through the state of Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development funds some of our grants as well.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing. So also in addition to GEDs, you said this morning you were teaching an English language learning class.
Yeah.
Are those also available at no cost?
Definitely, yes. Those are another thing that we offer right now. Just to give a plug, we've got a Tuesday evening class happening at the Valley Library. 5:30 to 6:30 is a sort of a beginning English language learning class, and 6:30 to 7:30 is more intermediate or advanced. And then we have that same thing going on Fridays, 9 to 10 a.m. Beginning English language learning, and 10 to 11 is intermediate advanced.
And do these all happen? Well, obviously you said some happen at the library. Does some of the classes happen at your main location, which is, where is that?
Yeah. Yeah. So our Friday classes happen, here through Thanksgiving, and then we'll actually have a new schedule for, the new year. But yeah, that's at 210 Ferry Way, which is downtown, okay. Not too far from the, you know, from the cruise ship docks, kind of right in the middle of it all. And it's a it's a red building with some big decals on the windows that I think people say makes it hard to miss.
Awesome. That's cool. And what is trades training?
Yeah. So it's a program we've got that helps with pre-apprenticeships and options for people who want to get into something. For example, they want to learn more about construction, or they want to get into becoming an electrician, or getting into the mining industry. The Learning Connection's got sort of the connections to get them into either pre-apprenticeship classes to get them started, and then programs that they can funnel them through to get them into, you know, job placement, or at least connected with the training to get towards that.
That seems like a good thing for somebody who might be looking to, you know, change trades, like in terms of doing something different from what they're doing now.
Definitely.
And, you know, the option to be able to get your GED, to learn English learning classes, trades training. This is an amazing resource that I can't believe is offered at no cost.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it's right now, I think it's feeling like a little bit untapped as a resource as well. And I think part of that is because it was such a challenge for us during the pandemic to really get, you know, to get all those things out there. And And I think it takes time for everyone to realize, oh, this is a place I can go. You know, this is a place that will be responsive and, you know, help me set goals, help me get what I need. So
that's awesome. And you are also looking for volunteers, right? You need people to volunteer to help out.
Yeah, definitely. We also exist partially because of our, you know, the volunteers that we're like so grateful for. Our volunteers act as tutors. We have a wonderful volunteer running our Tuesday classes at the library. There's chances big and small if you want to take on something that's like, you know, a bigger project or helping with a larger class. That's certainly something. But for a lot of our tutors, it's, you know, an hour a week to connect with someone and help them go over essays that they've written or work with them. You know, if their, you know, specialty is, if your specialty is math, you know, you can work with someone who's trying to learn, you know, enough algebra to really get them through their GED. So yeah.
That's fantastic. What a fantastic resource. And I know that not only can you learn from the learning connection or CERC in general, but you can also work there if you want. So there are some job openings listed on the main website, which is CERC, CERC.org. You can head over there and find out information about all of their programs, as well as, you know, information on how to volunteer and also the jobs that are available. And then the main website for the Learning Connection is TLC, pretty easy to remember, Tender Loving Care, or the Learning Connection, Alaska.org. And you can find it all about getting your GED or trades training or English learning classes as well, and so much more.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Joe, thanks so much for coming in today and telling us that basically CERC is back. The Learning Connection is back. No more Zoom classes.
Unless you need a Zoom class.
Yeah, unless you need it. But better to be in person, which is great. And really appreciate you coming in today and telling us all about it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, if you've been putting it off, the time is now. Come in and talk to us and we will get you set up. So thanks again.
Of course, tlcalaska.org or CERC, CERC.org. Up next, Halloween at Eagle Crest starts tonight. Haunted houses and more, and it's all for a good cause. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Glenadie have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Starting tonight, Fish Creek Lodge shall be considered haunted. It's all in good fun for Halloween season, and it supports a great cause. Here from Eagle Crest Ski Area to share about this and all goodness coming to the area this season are Kristen Strom, Marketing and Events Manager for Eagle Crest, as well as Quinn Zahosky,
Yep, close enough.
Or is it Haskey?
Yeah, there we go.
Haskey, okay. Quinn's a Haskey. Snow sports school coordinator. He manages the books to board program, which is one of the things we'll be talking about at Eagle Crest Ski Area. So, boo! And also, good of the cheese for being here today. How are you both?
Thank you. Well. Good. Well. We're excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Kristen, let's start with Night of Frights, which is the first annual Night of Frights. This isn't something that Eagle Crest has done before. Are we starting a tradition?
Yeah, I hope so. It's the first annual for a reason. So hopefully it'll be something that happens every year from here on out. Quinn's been great at coordinating the event and setting up Fish Creek. It's already kind of an old spooky lodge feel. So we're really excited.
How did the idea come up or come about?
Oh, it was Quinn's idea.
Yeah, I've grown up in Juneau, gone to Eagle Crest since I was a kid, and I've always been creeped out by the lodge and, you know, figured it'll be the proper next step.
Okay. Yeah. So, and when did this idea come to you? I mean, you've been thinking about it for a while.
I've worked there for going on 5 years and I've always wanted to do it, but this was the year since I've been running the Books to Boards program. I was like, well, now we have an excuse to put it on. So doing it as the fundraiser was our perfect kickoff point.
That's awesome. Okay. We'll get into the fundraiser and a part of it in a second, but what can we expect from Night of Frights? I know it starts tonight and it runs basically the Friday and Saturday for the next 2 weekends. Is that right?
Yeah.
And it starts, I love that you have this in the description. You have lights on hours, which is maybe to help the littles maybe not be as scared.
Exactly.
And that is from when to when?
6 to 7 o'clock. And by lights on, we mean we're going to have some of the fluorescent lights that are normally on in the lodge, because we do want it to be a family event and we want people to bring up their younger kids. And then from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, all the fluorescents will be off and we'll have our strobe lights and our LED lights and all the ambient lighting to give it the proper spooky feel.
Ooh, that sounds good. And do you have like volunteers or workers who are going to be, are they going to be like scaring me from behind a bookcase and things like that?
Well, we can't tell you that. Yeah. Then you know where the scare's coming from.
I need to know before I go in, Mom, what's in there? Is there spiders?
We might have a couple, but those might have already been there.
Right. The lodge is pretty old. And then what else is there other events surrounding that? Or is it, and I know it costs a couple bucks to get in, like $5, which is easy peasy, which we'll talk about why that's a good cause in just a second here. But is there other things around the lodge that are going to be happening? Is the outside, I guess maybe because weather, it's probably not the best idea.
We're strictly doing just the lodge this year. Okay. Since it's our first year, we're trying to keep it tame and something we can handle with our staffing and volunteer base.
Yeah.
But it's still a great night to drive at the mountain and go on in.
Yeah. Do the kids get some candy or anything? If you survive
if they bring it themselves, we're trying to raise funds for the Books to Boards program.
Okay.
So we're
okay. Because I was thinking, man, if I can get through the haunted house, maybe I get like a fun size Snicker or something.
Just bragging rights.
Yeah. Just like I did it. Like that's your reward. Yeah. That's your thing for getting through. I remember I went with my daughter to something in Anchorage one time and we were so, it was in the mall, right? It was the mall ones. And you think that's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But then there was these people dressed up as like clowns and all this kind of stuff. And they were just like coming and standing and staring at us. And my poor daughter was like, I don't know, 10 at the time. And she was just like, we were all just freaked out. I was freaked out. It was
not fine.
It was kind of fun. So, but that's the best part about Halloween. You get a little scare on, you know, that kind of thing. And as we mentioned, entry is $5 and it's all for a good cause. So it goes to the Eagle Crest Foundation and the Books to Board Kids program. So Quinn, what is the Books to Boards program?
Yeah, it's a great program. It's a scholarship program for middle school youth. So Floyd Dryden, DeSanta Kahini, Montessori, Charter School, they all get to be a part of it. And if the kids are chosen for the program by their teachers, they keep their grades up throughout the winter, and they get to get free ski passes, lift tickets, rental gear, transportation to and from the mountain all winter long. And we give them clubs at school. We do ski days on the mountain. We sometimes have pizza parties. So it's just a way for them to get out during the winter, kind of get some community with their friends that they might not have, and get a lot of mentorship from the staff at Eagle Crest.
That's awesome. But it is set up as a reward for good grades, going to school, happen.
They do monthly grade checks where we check in with the teachers to make sure they're on track. And if they're falling back that month, we give them some goals to strive for. If they can complete their goals, they can then come to the mountain again.
Wow. How many kids are involved in this program?
It's been going for back and forth, 12 years now. Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of been hit or miss, but I think our biggest year was like around 100. Wow. This last year we had 50.
Okay.
And this year we're hoping to have 50 or more. It's all based on how much staff we have.
Yeah.
It's how many kids we can handle.
And they do, when is it specific times of the week that they go?
They can, so it's up to the kids when they come to the mountain. Any day that they don't have school, that we're open, they can come. So all through Christmas break, all through spring break, every weekend. We had one kid last year who came out of the 54 days they could come. She came 53 days.
Wow.
So that's they awesome. Have a lot of opportunity to be at the mountain.
Do they get, is there something for their parents or you pick them up?
We have the snow bus that runs.
Okay.
And the general public snow bus that just runs to and from the mountain in the morning and the afternoon. And they just go hop on the ride and we know who they are. So they don't have to pay for it when they get to the mountain.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That is really nice. Is there a specific age requirement?
It is middle school. So middle school. 7th and 8th graders.
Okay. 7th and 8th graders.
And 6.
Oh, and 6. Yeah. Oh, I forget that. Because when I went to middle school, it was just 7 and 8. But I know that they've combined that now. Mm-hmm. So 6, 7, and 8 graders can be part of this program as long as your grades are up. And how do they find out about that? Do their teachers have info on that? Indeed. Or can they go to parents go to Ski Eagle Crest and find out more? Or
they can
what?
Go to the Eagle Crest Foundation website.
Okay.
EagleCrestFoundation.org.
EagleCrestFoundation.org. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they can go there to learn about it. But to actually get into the program, they talk to their teachers at school. And we have the teachers reach out to kids that they think would benefit, whether it's from a social or an economic need that the program can benefit. And once they have reached out or are reached out to by their teachers, they're given an application, they fill it out, give it back to their teachers, and the teachers get them to me. And then we're actually just next week, we're announcing to the kids who gets into the program this year. So it's coming up quick.
Okay. That's awesome. What a great program. I wish I had something like that when I was in school. I didn't have that. Maybe I would have worked a little bit harder.
It is a good incentive.
Because the reward is so good because, you know, skiing can be prohibitive for some folks. I'm sure you help with equipment and things that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, they get rental gear for free.
Yeah. It's a whole thing because it's one of those things where you're like, I really do want to go skiing, but I don't have skis or, you know, I can't get there or all the different impediments to actually getting there, which is, you know, unfortunate. But this program really helps out. And hopefully build skiers for life, as it were, right? I mean, that's a cool thing. Get off the phone and be on the mountain, right? So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, we have a lot of books to board kids who, once they reach high school, they can't be in the program anymore and they become employees because they just love being up there.
Right.
So that's really cool to see the turnover.
Yeah, and give back a little bit, right? Yeah, exactly. That's cool. And how long have you been running the program, Quinn?
This is my second year running it.
Okay.
My third year working in it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's really great. Okay, so there is obviously going to be some other things happening at Eagle Crest this season. Let's turn to you, Kristen. So what else is – tell us a little bit, for those who may not know, maybe they just moved to Juneau, they don't know how cool Eagle Crest is. It's this hidden gem, but it's not so hidden. Tell us some of the great features about Eagle Crest and why people should get excited for ski season, which I can't believe winter's almost here, but it is.
Oh my gosh, believe it. Yeah. Snow is in the forecast, insanely enough.
But, yeah, wow.
No, Eagle Crest is great. It's Juneau's kind of hidden winter playground. It's really the thing to do when you're here all season long in the winter. It's just a great place. It's a great outlet for us, for locals to come and play. It's just a great mountain to really find your community and have a great time. But we've got a lot of stuff coming up before ski season. Opening day is December 2nd, which coming up rapidly.
Right around the corner. Stuff yourself on Turkey Day and then be ready to work it off on the mountain, right?
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll be seeing plenty of snow before then. We've been able to purchase a couple more snow guns for this winter. So we're excited to be able to utilize those just in case. But, you know, we've got lots of kind of season building events coming up. We've got Ski Swap November 2nd through 5th, which is the first time we'll be able to print season passes and kind of get your gear into the Ski Swap and for people to kind of, you know, clear out their closets, get rid of their old ski gear, sell it, and then for folks to buy some new gear for the winter. So.
Right.
That's exciting, and that's coming up, again, November 2nd through 5th. It's a Centennial Hall. And then we've got the Snowvember film series in November. That'll be a couple of weekends of just some ski films that will be showing at Eagle Crest and downtown.
Get us primed, right?
Yes, get us ready. You stoked. Yeah.
Getting really ready to do it. And are we entering any, like, I know that Eagle Crest has often been like up for kind of like, you know, has been entered in all those competitions, and they get up for like being best ski hill in the world kind of thing, that we're actually in the running for those often. Mm-hmm. And are we up for any of that again this year?
We're up for a couple of awards for just kind of our videographer skills on the mountain. We've got a couple of one of the films we'll be showing is the Northern Aspects Film Festival, and that's all Alaskan-based submitted films. And our videographer last year ended up winning an award for that. So hopefully that'll be happening again this year, and just more exposure to the mountain. But it's still just Juneau's best kept secret right now.
So. I love it. It's like over 600 acres, and it's just like up there, and you go up there and you can have so much fun. And like you said, you've got another snow gun this year, which is going to be great. So
yeah,
several. I mean, I have friends who are there every weekend.
Yeah.
You know, that's their plan, is they're just, you know, that Saturday they're up at, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, where's so-and-so? Well, they're skiing.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the things that is possible. So I know, just to run it over in terms of real quick, what kind of passes are we looking at this year? Is there anything different from previous years? I know we can go to skieaglecrest.com mm-hmm. and find out all the information, right?
Yeah, for sure. So the last chance to save on your season's pass is by November 5th. That's the tier 2 deadline for season pass sales. And then after that, it's just going to be full price for the remainder of the season. So definitely want to get your season pass by November 5th at midnight. And then we still have, you know, flex passes available, multi-visit cards. All of that stuff is going to be at tier 2 until November 5th. So got to be sure to go to skieaglecrest.com. Get your passes ahead of time, or else you'll be paying full price at the window.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like that lines up right with the deadline of the ski swap.
The ski swap, yeah. So you're able to purchase
that all then,
yeah.
too. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of cool. But really what's happening is that the Nights of Fright mm-hmm. begins tonight. Mm-hmm. I want to put on my best Vincent Price voice, but I don't do Vincent Price. So, but Nights of Fright starts tonight. It's the haunted Fish Creek Lodge. So it's a haunted house, but it's really a haunted lodge, which is, yes. I think, really appropriate for Alaska, right? In terms of that. It's the first annual one of these. It is supporting a great cause, Books to Board, for middle schoolers. And you can find out more information about that at the foundation website, which is, again,
it's eaglecrestfoundation.org.
Okay. Eaglecrestfoundation.org is where you can find information on that. And for the main mountain information,
skieaglecrest.com.
Awesome. That's so good. Quinn and Kristen, thanks so much for coming in and telling us about this cool event. It's starting tonight, and it runs Friday and Saturday this weekend, Friday and Saturday next weekend.
Yeah, and it's just $5 cash only. So.
$5 cash only. Bring some green. And from 6 to 7, the lights are on. Yep. From 7 to 9, the lights are off.
Yep.
So you do that as you do with that information as you will. I really appreciate you coming in today. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Geez.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Up next, episode 3 of the Maga Cuento project dropped today. It's called The Story Behind Juneau's Filipino Community Hall. We'll have a listen next. But first, the Alaska Federation of Natives Conference is happening now in Anchorage. Here's a short report from public media station KNBA. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
From the 2023 Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage, Alaska, I'm Jill Freitas. An exhibit opened Wednesday night at the Dena'ina Convention Center that looks at the work of Bill Hess and his 40 years of photographing Alaska Native veterans. KMBA's Rhonda McBride was there for the opening.
Before you enter the main convention hall, large panels with portraits and candid photographs line the way.
Actually, when you walk in, it draws you in.
Wanda Solomon Parsons came dressed in uniform. She served 2 tours of duty in Afghanistan and was struck by how the photos evoke the spirituality of serving your country.
It draws you into a story, and it draws you into a personal life of an Alaskan Native veteran that served. We all have a story to tell.
And along with the photographs, you can read about each veteran's life.
I capture what I see and feel. And the feeling is every bit as important as the eye.
Bill Hess says this exhibit showcases photographs of more than 60 veterans, culled from 4 decades of pictures that he snapped at veteran ceremonies, as well as sit-down portraits of vets he met along the way.
I don't feel like I've photographed near enough, actually.
But long enough to know that Alaska Native veterans don't get near enough appreciation. Out of all the ethnic groups in the country, Alaska Natives have among the highest rate of service. And yet, as a people, Hess says they've been treated terribly.
These are Alaska Native Indigenous people willing to put their life on the line for a country that took it upon itself to subsume most of their country, but it's still their country.
From the Territorial Guard to Vietnam to the Persian Gulf Wars, Iraq, and Afghanistan, the exhibit shows how this legacy of service has been passed down across the generations. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
The 2023 AFN Citizen of the Year Award went to Kodiak resident Margaret Roberts on Thursday. She was nominated by the Woody Island Tribal Council and was selected by the AFN Board of Directors. She passed away in July of last year and has been praised by communities all over Alaska for her tireless dedication to the Aleutic language and dance, as well as advocating for the rights of Aleutic people and Alaskans. Born and raised in Kodiak, Roberts was known for her leadership. She served on boards for many tribal councils, including the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act Corporation, as well as other nonprofit organizations. Roberts' daughters joined the presenters and the Aleutic Dancers, a dance group Roberts created, on stage. Leslie Ann Hegelin, Roberts' oldest daughter, spoke of her mother's tireless commitment to her people and corporations, even while fighting cancer and just having had surgery.
She tells me she leaves that Sunday to Seattle for housing meetings and conference. I said, "What? Mom, you just got back from surgery. What are you thinking? You can't go. You're still weak." Mom went. It was about a week later. She looked just exhausted. Mom had selflessness and worried about everyone.
Hegelin said Roberts also fought for the Aleutic language to be taught in her daughter's school.
And it did happen. Sammy had 4 years of Aleutic language in high school.
Roberts' youngest daughter, Lacey Roberts, spoke with emotion about the void her mother left when she passed.
She left behind a beautiful legacy. She is our first thought each day and our last thought before we go to sleep each night. Our lives were forever changed the day that she passed. She taught us to be proud of who we are, and we hope and pray that she will forever watch over us and that she's proud of us, and that we've managed to learn how to navigate through each day without her.
After Roberts' daughters accepted the award, the Kodiak Aleutic Dance Group performed a native dance to honor the memory of the woman who made it possible for them to be up on the stage that day. Roberts was known in her Aleutic language as the one who dances. In Anchorage, I'm Jill Freitas.
The AFN Newscast is produced by KMBA and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with support from the Atwood Foundation, ConocoPhillips, Manilik Association, South Central Foundation, Calista Corporation, Rasmussen Foundation, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Donlin Gold, the Siri Foundation, and ExxonMobil. This is a production of KMBA, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Gathered inside Juno's Filipino Community Hall on a cold winter night, families and friends chat over plates of babinka and mamon. Suddenly, the crowd lights up, recognizing the tune of a classic Filipino Christmas song. A young girl, one of many children performing at the party, smiles as she hears the audience sing along to her violin. Throughout the year, this hall hosts wedding receptions, birthday and graduation parties, memorial services, and cultural and holiday celebrations like this one from last Christmas. But if you're just walking by the building, you could easily miss it. It's not flashy. There aren't many windows letting you peer inside, only a humble plaque announcing what it is. But for more than 50 years, It's been a literal and figurative home to Juno's Filipino community. This is Mango Cuento, a podcast sharing the diverse stories of Juno's Filipino community. I'm your host, Tasha Elizarde. In the heart of downtown, sitting among the tourist shops, is the Filipino Community Hall. A lot of Juno's Filipinos grew up in this building, but things have changed over the years. The building is getting older, along with many of the people who made this building their home. And now, many of their children and grandchildren have different priorities. KTOO's Adeline Baxter explores the origins of Juno's Philcom Hall and what it means to the community today.
If you want to know how the Filipino Community Hall came to be, you need to talk to Bob Paulo.
My name is Robert P. Paulo. I was born and raised in Juneau, Alaska. I am what you would call Indopino Mestizo. My dad is Filipino. His name was Fausto Paulo. He came from Laganbanois, Calibo. Came to Alaska late 1928-29. Then he came to Juneau. And that's where my history starts.
Paulo is in his 70s now, and he remembers the place where Filipinos used to gather in Juneau, even before today's hall ever existed.
The Filipino Hall, they used to have a hall, but it was called the pool hall. Now people don't talk about the pool hall. Well, I grew up in that pool hall.
He remembers the hall being loud, full of voices, people laughing and joking around, unwinding after long days working in the canneries and mines. It was a place to share food and find community in a town where being Filipino wasn't always easy.
It didn't make any difference if you hit a kind of a Sayan or a Tagalog, because it was, everything was broke up. They'd speak Ilocano, Visayan, or whatever. They call it halo-halo. Halo-halo means like it's mixed up. It's all mixed up. It burnt down, I think it was in 65, but people tell me 66, down on Willoughby Avenue behind the Longshoreman Hall. It was just a small 15 by 60, 70 feet on pilings.
Suddenly, the community had no anchor. They needed a place to gather and celebrate, but they also needed a benefactor.
My dad's uncle was the president of the Filipino community at the time, was Sammy Constantino. And Vincent Esmino was there, and Vincent Asturias, Frank Sison, Joe Albialde, Danny Sarabia, and Bessie Quinto. Very important to recognize Bessie Quinto, because she's the only female that sat on there.
Juno's main Filipino organization, Filipino Community Inc., or Philcom, goes back to the 1930s and even earlier, but it wasn't officially established until February 1st, 1956. All of the names Paulo listed are the people who signed the Articles of Incorporation. But when it came time to find a new permanent home, Paulo's uncle, Fred Carrillo, a successful local businessman, got involved.
When it burnt down, they got the insurance money. Well, the banker came to my Uncle Fred and said, Mr. Carrillo, we have another building for you to buy. My uncle says, I own this building. I own three other buildings. It's hard to try to keep up the payment. I don't want to lose it. I don't want another building. And I was there. We were sitting there just listening, and they were talking, and he goes, well, you need to buy this building. He said, well, let me talk to somebody that I know. And then that's where he talked to the Filipino community board members.
They had a benefactor, but they still needed to raise the rest of the money to buy the building.
My dad's uncle, Buddy Gomez, who used to be the president also of Filipino Hall, he used to walk around Juneau with a cigar box. The only one that I know that walked around Juneau with a cigar box, would you like to donate to the Filipino community? Would you like to donate? The canneries in Juneau or whatever would have dances. And in the canneries, they'd say, if you want to dance, you got to put 10 cents, quarter, whatever you can afford to dance. My sister was part of it, my older sister. And that's how they gathered money in the canneries. And they'd send it off to the Filipino Hall. So my Uncle Fran co-signed for that building. And that's how the Filipino got the building.
Rosita Whirl was one of the young volunteers who helped raise money for the new hall. Today, she's an anthropologist and a prominent leader in the Alaska Native community. She's not Filipino, she's Tlingit. But she was raised in a mestizo household in Juneau by an aunt who became her adopted mother, the same Bessie Quinto who Paulo mentioned.
And one of the ways that they made money was by having these dances, and they would have baskets filled with, you know, goodies, food, and other kinds of things. And the young girls would have the basket, and the men would bid, you know, to dance with the young ladies. And then somebody, another Filipino, would come behind him, tap his back, and then they would have to, you know, dance with these Filipinos. 13, 14 years old, and we were dancing with all these old Filipino guys, you know. And that's what I remember about us, you know, helping to make money for the Filipino Community Hall.
World doesn't remember the original hall as a pool hall. She just remembers the dances, food, and celebrations. She also remembers it as one of the gathering places for the women's auxiliary formed by the Tlingit wives of Filipinos. They advocated for unions and civil rights, but they ultimately came into conflict with the Filipino women who arrived later.
The Filipinos were working in the canneries. The women were working in the canneries as well. So they got very involved, like my mother, Bessie Quinto, got very involved in organizing unions throughout the whole Southeast. And I remember because I would go and take minutes when she was would go and organize union meetings. And I think I was all of 10 years old. But there was that split. There was that division between the Tlingit women who were married to Filipinos. And then when the women came from the Philippines, they were not happy that the auxiliary club was made up of the Tlingit women. And I know that there are some who are mestizos, some that do go to the Filipino Community Hall, but others don't anymore because of that division that happened with parents.
So now we've learned about the hall's origins. When Fred Carrillo agreed to act as financial guarantor to First National Bank for the purchase of 251 South Franklin Street, he gave the community a permanent place of its own, one that has survived for more than half a century. When Philcom moved in at the beginning of the 1970s, it sustained the community hall with membership dues, fundraisers, and grants. According to city records, the building was built in 1909. Before it was the Filipino Community Hall, it housed a hardware store at one point and apartments upstairs. Today, those apartments are mainly used for storage. But Ed Carrillo, Fred Carrillo's nephew, lived in one with his family when he first arrived in 1975 from Aklan.
There's two suite or two apartments, one on the right and one on the left. And we used to just live right here, just outside this wall. Used to be the room and just up that way. So it's, for me, it has a lot of history because we live in it.
Carrillo's family moved out of the building after a few years, but his connection to it continued. You'll hear more about that in a bit. Over the years, the Filipino Community Hall was the place for new arrivals from the Philippines to find a sense of community. It's where Philcom board members helped migrants get situated in Juneau and connect with one another, sometimes helping with immigration petitions for family members still in the Philippines. It hosted annual parties, celebrations, and delegations from the motherland and the Philippine consulate in San Francisco. But maybe most importantly, it gave people a connection to home and a place to be proud of their heritage. But despite the name, the hall isn't just for Filipinos. Even though a lot of Juneau residents wouldn't know it, many events there are open to the public, like weekly bingo nights.
Oh, 69. Oh, 65. The giving operations has been going on a regular basis, Thursdays and Sundays. And it has been going that way since 1990s up to now, until the COVID happened.
That's Dante Reyes, or Uncle Dante, as he's known. He came to Juneau with his family in the 90s from Manila. He's had a lot of roles within Philcom: president, vice president, bookkeeper, janitor, basically whatever needs to get done. Philcom's charitable gaming operation is a big deal for them. It brings in tens of thousands of dollars every month, but it was suspended for about 2 years due to the pandemic. A lot of nonprofits struggled during that time, and Philcom was no different.
We have an old building, so we need a lot of, we were doing a lot of repairs like roof replacement, maybe some windows replacement and so on. So that's the big cut of our, that's a big part of our budget.
The pandemic also paused a lot of the gatherings Philcom members looked forward to every year.
We're very limited in our resources, so we haven't, and we have a big, and also for our own programs, like a very big program like scholarship, we have that, and some other activities or programs that we celebrated, like for instance, every holidays that that we are celebrating here in the U.S., we also celebrate, and usually the programs or the events are open to the public.
That includes the annual 4th of July celebration and other holidays. And those scholarships he mentioned? Every year, Philcom gives away thousands of dollars to high school seniors to help them pay for college. For a long time, that was a major incentive for young people and their parents to join the organization. But in recent years, membership has declined. One person I talked to estimated that there are half as many active Philcom members today compared to a decade ago. Back at the community hall, Ed Carrillo is giving me a tour of the building with his son, Edric. Ed is a former Philcom vice president. He has a huge set of jingling keys that open all the doors. Today, Edric, who was born in Juneau, is the president.
Well, I might say I forced him to, or I gave him a guidance.
No, you voluntold me.
Yeah, volunteered.
We call it voluntelling. So. Yeah.
So, but we needed to have somebody within your blood that comes in to continue on and bring it to a better place than the former predecessor can do. So we're hoping that new generation will come back and start really thinking about the Filipino community is not just a place to hang out. It's a place to motivate and be more active to the community.
You know, for me, this is one of those things that I was voluntold into. You know, I think I started when I was like 21. Like I started on the board. Yeah. My dad's birthday present to me was giving me a lifetime membership.
Downstairs in the main hall, staff from Carrillo's food cart are prepping ingredients to serve to tourists and locals downtown. The cart is owned by members of Ed and Edric's family, and they rent kitchen space in the hall during the summer months. Upstairs are offices, storage, a dance studio, and the office of Juneau's honorary consulate for the Philippines. The dance studio is where Edric spent many long hours as a kid practicing for Ali Tap Tap, a dance group affiliated with Philcom.
I think it's one of those things to me is the parents need to take involvement of the kids' education and what their activity is going to be. Because without the parents doing their part of it, the kids is not going to follow through. But if you tell them this is what I wanted you to do, then a lot of them will follow through. I'm just scratching my head and saying, okay, you know, even my relatives and stuff, but you guys need to be involved. If they don't want to take over, you know, somebody has to come in. Yeah. So it seems like I'm putting a burden on my son to do this. So, but right now I think he's okay with it, but his life could change somewhere down the line. So I might have to ask someone else to step in and say, who's next?
Edric just got married and he works full time. So he's really familiar with trying to juggle it all. And he knows that some members of his generation just don't feel the need to come to the hall every week like his dad's generation did. The building still hosts holiday gatherings and bingo, and this summer they started offering Filipino language classes again. But it's not the same as it was.
You know, we're constantly looking at ways to try and get some engagement. And I'm under the thought process that, you know, you know, like Field of Dreams, you know, if you build it, I'm probably misquoting. You get clean this up, Adeline. I don't know.
Yeah,
if you
no,
build
I
it,
think
they will come, you know?
That's and right.
So,
that's a quote.
So, you know, things like the language classes and reoffering, you know, Ali Tap Tap as cultural dances.
They want to keep the connection between Juno's Filipinos and their culture. But the reality is they also need new members for financial reasons. Century-old buildings need maintenance, especially in a place like Juno.
One day, you know, I came into the hall and everything was looking fine. And the next day, there was a giant hole with a big old leak that had seeped through from the very ceiling all the way down to the ground floor. And I'm like, oh, that's a new hole. What do we do with that?
So we're trying to find out the issue on that one. I think it was just too much snow one time. So it got into the ventilation system and just...
It was a big snowfall we had last year.
I think that's one of the issues, but not 100%. And I think for us down the future is, how do we make the space more usable? Because right now there's so many, as you can see, there's a lot of, it's not functional.
Downstairs, as I'm about to leave, we stop to chat with Alex Grillo, Ed's cousin who's busy managing money for the food cart. He heard us talking about the decline in membership, and he wants to weigh in.
I'll give you an example. Like my kids nowadays, you know, they don't want to come over here and go to Thanksgiving. But when we were in high school and we were in middle school, all of us Filipinos that were born here, or Filipinos that came from, you know, the Philippines and migrated here, we all used to gear up for, oh, there's a party at the Filipino Hall. We all used to dress up and all. We're excited for our parties back then, you know. And now it's hard to get kids to be involved or to want to even come and join parties anymore, because it's just different. I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, they just didn't grow up here anymore. You know, it's just so much more. We relied on each other.
Clearly, Filipino Community Inc. and the Community Hall are facing some very real challenges. Will membership pick up again? Will the Community Hall continue to be the center of life for Filipinos in Juno? Who can say? But it's impossible to discount the role the hall has had, and still has for many people, including Edric. And he says he's not giving up.
You know, I'm trying to bring a new perspective, which is something that's more open, and I don't really care about the whatever drama or things that happened before, you know, why things aren't involved or how people feel politically. I'm just here to try and make sure that this organization that, you know, my dad and lots of people before him and like hundreds of years of effort that people put into making this community vibrant and what it is today doesn't falter.
Salama po and goodness cheese for listening to Mga Kwento. In our next episode, Yvonne Crumry dives into a Filipino community with historic roots in Juno, people with Tlingit and Filipino ancestry.
When we were young, the biggest thing really was that the Filipino community really took care of us, because prejudice was not only white. Our native people were very prejudiced at the time also. And so when we were born, half Filipino and half Tlingit, it was difficult for us to decide where do we belong.
Mga Kwento is brought to you by KTOO Public Media. This episode was written by Adeline Baxter, edited by Tasha Elizarde and Shane Nuesca, and produced by Dave Waldron. This episode also contains an interview completed by Mana Alaska. Salama and Goodness Sheesh Filipino Community Incorporated for your knowledge, music, and audio included in this series. To Z Squared Studio for creating a beautiful logo for the Mga Kwento project. And to Mana Alaska for sharing your research around Filipino elders in Juno. And of course, Salama and Goodness Sheesh Bob Paulo, Rosita Whirl, Dante Reyes, Ed and Edric Carrillo, and Alex Jr. Carrillo for sharing your stories for this episode of Mga Kwento. You can learn more about Juno's Filipino community by visiting ktoo.org/Filipinos in Alaska. Funding for Mga Kwento comes in part from the City and Borough of Juno and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Juneau Douglas City Museum's 2023 Juneau History Grant, with funding from the Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum and the Juneau Community Foundation, grant and aid from the Alaska State Museum, National Trust for Historic Preservation's Telling the Full History Preservation Fund, with support from the National Endowment for the Humanities, and KTOO supporters like you. If you like what you hear, help us continue to uplift Juneau's stories by donating to ktoo.org. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the National Historic Trust, the National Endowment for the Humanities, or any other entity that has contributed to the financing of this project.
You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. That was Maga Cuento, a project from KTOO News exploring the history and current life of Filipinos in Juneau. It's available in your podcast app of choice with 3 episodes out now and 2 more planned over the coming Fridays. Also, there is an ongoing exhibit at the Juneau Douglas City Museum entitled Maga Cuento, Filipinos in Juneau. For more on the podcast, visit ktoo.org. And for the museum exhibit, visit juneau.org/museum. That will do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Have a fantastic weekend. Juneau Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. Hello out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, suggest ideas, offer feedback, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juneau Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Gunath Cheesh.